Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, December 16th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at the website, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any emotional experience that I perceive as negative into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also, from that page, just download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have called in and been stepped through the worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that process has improved the quality of their lives. And you can go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, as it frequently leads to comments, questions, and or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, press 1. It will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 350th day of the year, and today's lesson reads, Miracles mirror the Creator's eternal love. To offer those miracles is to remember the Creator, and through that memory, to save the world. The commentary reads, what we forgive becomes a part of us as we perceive ourselves. The Son of Creation incorporates all things within himself as the Creator created him. The Creator's memory depends on his forgiveness. What he is unaffected by his thoughts. The offspring of creation are unaffected by their thoughts. But what the offspring of creation look upon is the direct result of their thoughts. So I can create the hallucination that I'm being attacked. I can create a belief that I have, you know, deep vulnerabilities and that I can be hurt by what someone says or does, or that my essence can be destroyed by an angry look. And yet, who and what I am, who and what you are, is not affected by your thoughts about you. You are not the summation of your thoughts about you. That's the essence of this spiritual teaching. Therefore, Creator, I would turn to you. Only the memory of you will set me free. And only this process of forgiveness teaches me to let the memory of creation return to me, and then I can give it to the world in deep thankfulness. As we gather miracles from the Creator, we will indeed be grateful, for as we remember the creation, we as the offspring of creation will be restored in this reality of love. The Course in Miracles experiment lesson from Pam Grout, lesson 50, is titled, Manifestors Who Do Too Much. She quotes Amanda Palmer as saying, she would think things so hard that they showed on her face. Pam writes, I got an email the other day from a reader of one of my books. Help, she said, I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. I meditate every day. I've made at least 3 vision boards. Every morning I make lists of positive aspects. I've got a focus wheel. And she says in parentheses, these last 2 are practices recommended by Abraham Hicks. And then the person goes on to say, and nothing is happening. Pam writes, I was exhausted just from reading her email. And here's what I told her after I took a few deep breaths. All of those practices are fabulous. I'm a fan of Abraham Hicks myself. And I know how tempting it is to work hard and to try. But when I try so hard, I negate the truth. I put up roadblocks to all the good that wants to manifest right before my eyes. This is important to say again. Everything I'm trying to manifest is already mine. It's right there in my field of potentiality. It's twiddling its thumbs. Except when I'm on a different wavelength, when I tune into the wavelength of I don't have it, I'd better put on my running shoes and move faster and try harder. Potentiality that's right there in front of me, twiddling its thumbs, it becomes invisible. Just like a filmmaker decides upon which of many objects his lens focuses, I get to decide if I want to zero in on the stuff in the foreground, what I have now, or if I prefer pointing my lens on something else. Reality is never static or complete. It is an unending process of movement and unfoldment. I'm the cameraman. I choose what to unfold, what to put in my lens, and where to point my viewfinder. So I choose to focus on the miracles of creation, infinite abundance all around me, and the love, the energy of creation, the miracle of life, expressing in, through, as, and around me in each moment. That's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment commentary for today. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes to talk. What's on your mind? How can we serve you with conversation, with discussion, with topics? 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. We can have a conversation. I was spending some time today with the book the topics evading the topic of the book is evading me, but it's about the history of us as human beings. It's about the idea that is so wrong and so simplistic that we had a very linear progression of civilization, moving from being hunter-gatherers into the agricultural world and then accumulation of wealth. And the title of the book is The Dawn of Everything, A New History of Humanity. And it's by David Graeber and David Wengrow, W-E-N-G-R-O-W. And the reason that I thought to mention that book here in this show is because the trap that we have as human beings is that we think we know. And we think we know, you know, it was pointed out in this lesson today and in the Course in Miracles experiment lesson, Pam Grout says, look, reality is not fixed. Actuality is not a fixed thing. It's this constant flow of the creative forces. So how could we possibly know this, that, or the other thing? And, you know, and the more we think we know something and then we relate to it as though it's a fixed thing, the more frustration, pain, fear, sadness, all those other negative emotions that we create in our lives show up for us. Well, so here's a book about humanity, the history of humanity, our civilization, the idea of governments and finances and how it evolved, and thoughts about, you know, these people that study these things, they're often coming up with theories about who we are as people and what we need and why we have to have governments and why we have to have kings and leaders and queens. And the theories of how all of this developed, that the scholars write about and discuss amongst themselves, are so convoluted and they're so constricted and they've been curated out from the actuality of life. And it takes, you know, absolute genius, like I believe at least one of these men, David Graeber, is, probably both of them. If he's writing a book with this David Wengrow, I guess he's probably another genius person. But it takes extensive exploration and observation and questioning, all right, I think I have a really good question here. You know, the question is, how did we get away from equality to have such inequality of wealth or inequality of power? How did we get, you know, so unequal in our treatment of other human beings? And I think that's a great question. I'm going to go off and I'm going to do research to figure out how that happened. We don't even realize, wait a minute, what that means is I'm assuming that at some point in time there was equality. There was this concept of equality with my definition for it. And there's no evidence that there was ever at any point in time. Sure, there are stories like the Garden of Eden where everybody's equal and nobody wears clothes and everybody has everything provided for them. And the everybody, of course, in that story is just two people, one man and one woman. So that's not evidence. And so these people decided to take a look at the history of humanity as it's been portrayed in these books and theories and books of economics and books of philosophy and books of history, and do the research to find out, is it true? Where did those books come from? Where did the opinions, ideas in those books come from? What does it look like if we go to indigenous people and start looking at what they had as a pattern of society, as their knowledge, as their philosophy, as their wisdom, and how does that mesh with what's in the academic books and the Western culture and the civilized culture? The point is, if I just take on face value what the book says or what the expert says, I set myself up to be led down the primrose path. I'm taking the blue pill. I'm believing what the experts say. And in this work, we are inviting people, everybody, whether it's on the internet show or the Mindshifter support groups, there's another support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. We're inviting people to question everything and to question it for yourself, not to take your questions to a guru or a teacher or a master, but to develop the connection within yourself to the source that can teach you endlessly. That still small voice, the great comforter, the light, the Holy Spirit, God, whatever you want to call it. Every human being has the potential to get access to that creativity, to that insight, to that intuition, to that collective unconscious, to the Akashic records, whatever you want to call it. And the core of this work is a set of tools that can help anybody who picks them up and starts applying them in their life get the garbage out of the way so they can have direct contact with that part of their own consciousness that can tap into the one mind, the Christ mind, the God mind, whatever you want to call it, to get what Guy Finley says. God didn't just put you in, the Creator didn't just put you in a world where if you work hard enough and you hike to some Himalayan cave and you find some guru, you can get answers. Guy Finley says, the Creator put you in a world where your instant, constant connection to that source that can guide you will never abandon you if you just ask to be taught, ask to be shown. And so whenever I know what I know, and I feel so solid because I know what I know, chances are pretty good I'm clueless. If I know what I know and I feel very solid with what I know and there's any kind of negative emotion active in my system, it's definite that I'm clueless, that I'm wrong, that I'm in error, that my thoughts are in error, that I'm running from a mechanical level of mind that's been programmed through the generations that will do nothing but perpetuate its thought process. And in that mechanism, generate more and more conflict, competition, and negative emotions. And if I want to have any kind of liberty, if I want to tap into the creative flow, if I want to get access to insight, intuition, and creativity, I've got to be willing to question everything I think I know. So when I think I know that we started as tribes of wild people, all hunter-gatherers, and then eventually somebody discovered how to till the soil and raise a crop, and that went right from there to people, now they can sell their crop because they have extra and they can accumulate wealth, and that all of the trade in the world was about wealth and power and prestige. If I think I know that, I'm way off the mark. And if I'm willing to question it, if I'm willing to approach any other system as though, well, it's a system. It exists. I wonder what the good sides of it are. I wonder what the upsides of it are. I wonder what the not-so-good sides of it are. Whether it was the Wyandot Indians or it was another Native American tribe or it was an indigenous Australian culture. And if I assume, well, they're just savages or they're not sophisticated or they're not, you know, the Western European and they don't know about God. And if I assume that because of those things, whatever they have as a system has less or no value, I'm cutting off my nose to spite my face. Because the history of humanity, the history of what we're calling civilization, has so many more twists and turns in it and gems to be discovered than you'll find when you read the history books or when you read the so-called history books and the philosophy books and the sociology books and the archaeological books, because they're just people writing them. There are people who, for so many of those authors, they're looking for a level of prestige within their community. And oddly enough, basically the exact opposite of what academics is supposed to be, people write books about subjects that sound a lot like all the other books about that subject so that they can be accepted. So once one book comes out and it's widely accepted and very popular, other people start writing about the fundamentals in that book as though they were the absolute truth, when in fact, it's just opinion. One of those that's so widespread is Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and she wrote about, you know, the stages of death and loss and grieving. And when she wrote that book, it was a set of ideas she had. She never said, this is hard, factual, researched data. And yet, it was so popular, it got to be so well accepted that many other books are written about the stages of death and loss and the stages of grief, and people talk about how they need to go through the five or seven stages depending upon what book you read. And it was never demonstrated. As a matter of fact, research that's been done since then indicates there isn't a pat answer, that people have a tremendous amount of variation in how they respond to death and loss and grief. And it's quite counterproductive, sometimes even detrimental, to try and force somebody to think about going through the stages of death and loss and grief the way Elizabeth Kubler-Ross first conceptualized it. So whatever it is you think you know, whether it's about psychology or religion or spirituality, or the invitation in this work is to question it all and to use your own internal guidance system. What does that look like? It looks like your emotions. One of my favorite ways to hear it was in the book Jesus, My Autobiography, where it says, your emotional energy system is your guidance system. And if you're experiencing calm, peace, compassion, joy, affection, you're probably headed in the right direction. If you're experiencing any of the other emotions that we would call tension, anger, fear, guilt, shame, you're headed in the wrong direction. You're headed in the wrong direction with your thoughts, your words, and your actions. And when you get those three lined up, thoughts, words, and actions, in the right direction, you'll have a sense of calm. When you're tuning into the still small voice, when you're actually tapping into insider intuition, one way you can know, is this the real thing, or am I just making this up? Is my ego trying to tell me? One way you can tell is if you're calm. If you've got a solid, calm, centered knowing, probably headed in the right direction. You're probably listening to the still small voice. So, 563-999-3581. The little clock on the dashboard says we've got 34 minutes left. How can we support you? What's on your mind? If you're one of those people on the call that hasn't spoken in a while, give us the gift of hearing your voice and your comments or questions. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. Again, I would request your loving thoughts and intentions and prayers and healing energies, whatever you want to send to Michael and Jeannie, because they are dealing with illness, coronavirus, and other stuff. And as most of us are, we can use all the loving support we can get. So I know they cut their show short yesterday because the people weren't raising their hand, and rest and relaxation are the order of the day. I know sometimes people are, I remember, especially when I lived, it was my second job after college. I lived out in Northern California, and the idea was never take a day off. Always go into work even if you're sick. Put your nose to the grindstone. And that was a very high standard. That was thought to be the best possible thing to do. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because people would show up at work sick, and then pretty soon all kinds of other people would get sick, and then we'd be short-staffed, and then we'd have people who were working when they're sick, and they'd stay sick longer. And I learned later in life that it isn't a badge of courage. It isn't necessarily a noble thing to show up to work when you're sick, because you're violating one of the most productive key lessons I've learned in the past 47 years of doing this kind of work, and that is to be gentle with yourself, to learn to listen to your body. And if your body is fatigued and achy, it's sending you signals, and those signals are not telling you, put your nose to the grindstone. So here's hoping that more and more people at least start questioning, what kind of results do I get when I try to push through an illness or a pain or a discomfort, as opposed to when I'm gentle with myself and nurture myself and listen to the body when it says a nap would be a good thing, rest would be a good thing, a mental health day would be a good thing. I had a 32-year-old who has young sons, and he got the word that his sons had tested positive for coronavirus. And his wife said, so this means we've got to lock everything down for, 2 weeks. And the guy flew into a rage. He didn't want to be told what to do. He didn't want to have to stay home. He didn't want to not be able to show up at work. And it was quite a bit of back and forth on the video call therapy session to help him look at the options from a more neutral or positive lens. And then a week later, We had a video call earlier this week, and he's in a completely different space. He saw the benefit in slowing down. He saw the benefit in taking time out of the breakneck pace he had going at work. He spent, I think he said he had 3 days where his body was so fatigued that he only spent 8 hours awake each of those 3 days. Mentally and emotionally, he was in a much better space because he was going with what was actual rather than fighting against it for some idealized standard that says you're not supposed to miss work and you're supposed to be highly productive at all times. And so if you're one of those people who pushes and grinds and puts your nose to the grindstone, the invitation in this work is question what kind of results you get. See if you can expand your horizons enough to take time off to be gentle with yourself and notice what happens when you do. Just notice. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We still have plenty of time to entertain your comments or questions. I've got a whole packet of notes that I usually write to myself for different things to talk about when no one has a hand up on the show. The core of the work is to learn and grow each day, but I'm learning and growing about myself. I'm learning how to look at things in a different way. Instead of buying into what I've been taught, I'm learning to question things. Things like when Rumi said, all pain becomes medicine in the presence of love. How could that be? Well, you know, like if Michael Rice says, pain is there to help grow my ears, to get me to slow down and pay attention, to understand that everything that exists in my energy system is there for a reason. Even these negative emotions I have, they're there, and the best use of them is to help me wake up to how I might be off the mark with my thoughts. If I continue to think I know I'm right, even when I'm in pain, I am missing the point dramatically. And I'm wasting good information. I'm wasting the creator-given feedback system that's there to guide me. I had somebody on a call earlier today, and she said, 2 times in a row, and my sister does this, and it's frightening. And I said, no, that's not the truth. She said, yes, it is. And I said, no, when your sister does that, it is not frightening. And she said, I know my system, and I know when my sister does this, it is frightening to me. So we had to slow it down, way down, and say, look, the outside event doesn't cause fear in me. The interpretation that I place on the outside event can contain thoughts that if I pour enough energy into them, I generate fear. And or the interpretation I place on my sister's actions can resonate energy of fear that I brought with me into this situation. That can happen. That does happen. And at the same time that happens, what my sister does not cause fear in me. and, you know, bless this person's heart, she was willing to stick with it enough that by the time we were done, we actually stepped through a worksheet process, and she was able to discern from that worksheet process that the energy of fear that she was experiencing was really there to cover up sadness, and it was sadness that was connected to events in her life when she was 7 years old. And she stayed open enough in her thought process to be able to question, was what her sister was doing actually causing her fear? And she woke up. She was able to wake up. And in the wake up, she moved from the fear into the sadness, and she started to see the connection to life events from as early as 7 years old. And here she is, you know, in her 40s, clearly no longer a seven-year-old. But she was able to wake up and understand that the events that happened when she was seven and the thoughts, beliefs, and energies that she downloaded from that time are still in her system. And if those things get activated and she uses those things to construct her interpretation of life today, she relives the negative energies, the sadness, the fear, the negative beliefs about the world and the way she's being treated as though she were still 7 years old. That reminds me, I have somebody coming in later today, and she is, the last time she was here, we were talking about the three early memories of conflict, and we gave her that worksheet, which is available on the website at whyagain.org, and we had her start filling it out, and she had three different events that came to mind. One was from 9 years old, and one was from 13, and one was from 14. And so we framed that out, and we sent her off to do that work, and it'll be interesting to find out what she's discovered about patterns that she's downloaded in her life quite a bit earlier in her life that every time they get activated today, they run her life. And she can be in her 50s, but responding the way she did when she was 9 years old. And I don't know how your life is working these days, but I can tell you with great clarity that if I continue to respond to things today the way I did when I was 9 years old, my life doesn't go so well. I end up blaming others. I end up procrastinating. I end up unhappy with my relationships. I end up far less productive as an adult than I could be if I'm acting from my adult sensibility with full access to my resources and training and life experience. But if I'm walking around as a grown man and my 9-year-old traumas get activated and my worldview, my actual perception of life as it's unfolding is driven by those energies, traumas, beliefs that I downloaded when I was 9 years old, my life doesn't go so smoothly. So, there's a whole host of tools available. The Reality Management Worksheet is one. The Three Early Memories of Conflict is another. The Codependence to Interdependence Worksheet is another. And in that one, I map out all the things that I believe people have done to offend me in my life. And then I specify what they did to offend me, what my punishment thought is for them, what my advice is to them. And last but not least, I get very clear about how I'm going to get busy and apply my advice to them in my life. Another tool that's available on the whyagain.org website is the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Tool. This has me identify a thought or a pattern of thoughts about which I might have some negative content in my unconscious emotions or thought process, and I craft a time in my life. I carve it out. I don't wait for it to happen. I carve out the time to spend an hour or more writing with no distractions. I get myself a stack of papers. I write my targeted statement, my mind shifter, on the left side of the page. I draw a line vertically down the page to separate that from the other side of the page. And then I just start free associating to that target statement. And I let myself write until I run dry, and then I rewrite the target statement. And I let myself write until I run dry, whether it's five words or five lines or five pages of writing. And when I run dry, I rewrite the target statement. And it's like striking a tuning fork and holding it to my unconscious. I'm adding energy to the part of my mind that I'm not consciously aware of. And as I add energy to that, it will eventually spill out on the page. And when I go back and review what I've written, I'm often amazed at the insights, the connections. Many times I'm writing about things that I've been aware of consciously for a long time, but I've never seen how it might relate to an emotional issue or a relationship issue in my life. So I can use the Reality Management Worksheet. I can use the three early memories of conflict. I can use the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter Tool. I can use the Codependence to Interdependence Worksheet to figure out what's the very best advice I have for everybody else in my life, and then make the commitment to start applying that advice in my own life. I can use the Mind Goal Management Worksheet, which helps me actively manage the stress in my mind and have a much more rewarding and highly productive day in and day out, because I'm using the device that Michael would call it the 9-bit mind, that conscious logical mind. I'm using it to manage my stress rather than to continually create stress that never gets resolved. And I know I've said this before, it strikes me, I recently had somebody else pick up that tool, and when they use it, they come back and they say, it's amazing. I only set 3 goals for myself each of the days this week, but I end up getting so much more done than when I don't use that tool, or when I just make a to-do list and it's got 30 items on it or 35 items on it. And the reasons, boy, they're complex and they're deep and they're real. And if you want more of an explanation of those, you can get Michael's lecture, Getting the Stress You Need. It's a 2-hour lecture available on the website where he talks in detail about how every time we set a goal, it stays running in our mind until it is either achieved or consciously canceled. And you might think, wow, that's a real pain in the butt. That's a real problem. But it's just the way things work. And if I understand how they work and I learn to work with them, it becomes a very powerful tool for my life to be more well-managed and for me to be more productive and efficient and effective. There's also a tool we've spoken about a few times recently. It's called the Responsibility Communication Tool. And it's a tool I can use to get very clear about how I'm creating any negative emotions I'm experiencing and how clearly my mind is trying to get me to believe someone or something outside of me is responsible for those emotions. And when I do that, I have options. I have better application targets for the tools that are available. So I can clear up the misperceptions in my mind, and I can effectively communicate to the people around me that here's what's going on for me, and I understand I'm creating that. Here's what I think happened between us and in the world around me, and here's the emotional impact that I generated from that. So, a host of tools that are available free, the worksheets and how to download them and the instructions for using them are available free. But you could also go to the store and order the DVDs of Michael's various lectures, whether it's Getting the Stress You Need, Laws of Living, Codependence to Interdependence, Healing Through Relationships, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, Empowered to Heal, etc. These are, you know, these were the core of what we built the Mind Shifter support groups on and watched them over and over and over again the first 7 or 8 years of the support group. Area code 828, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, this is Magda. How are you?
Well, I'm fine and delighted to hear your voice. How are you? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I've been hanging around and listening, but I have something to add today that might be helpful for other folks, and that is about the Mind Goal Management Worksheet, which you were just talking about a little while ago. And one thing that I have found that it's really helped me with is not only being more organized, getting more done, feeling more satisfied, but also that I'm more relaxed, I'm more peaceful. And I just thought about that for a minute, and I think the reason is because instead of having that long, long, long to-do list registered in my mind as my goal, I can put that off into its own category. Those are mights and maybes and want-tos and things like that. But they don't go on my goal sheet until I'm actually ready to work on them. And then, of course, I have the option of canceling sometimes through the day or at the end of the day or postponing and so forth. But that just clears my energy so much to realize I just need to focus on these three or these four rather than have my mind jumping around from there to there. And, oh, I've got to remember that. I'm afraid I'm going to forget that one. So anyway, I just wanted to add relaxation and peacefulness is a great result of using the Mind Goal Management Procedure.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I, as I said, there's just so many layers to it that if you wanted to understand it more in detail, you can listen to Dr. Rice's lecture on it. But that's a good point, that if I keep myself focused on these few goals, it's, as you're using the word, relaxing. It's more, it's a more peaceful day, and it's more manageable.
That's more manageable.
But there's a bunch of dynamics, including, you know, the idea that every time I set a goal, it continues to run in my mind until it's either accomplished or consciously canceled. And wake up and realize that, and realize we're not taught that, it's amazing. It's no wonder we're running around, burned out, frustrated, because we're trying to do things at a conscious, logical level that are literally in competition with what our unconscious is trying to monitor and get done without our awareness. So we've got all kinds of resources tied up in unconscious goals we don't even know are running, and it drains our energy.
It does. And I realize, too, that if I'm not clear about, and I love what you just added about consciously clearing, I don't know that I've ever thought about it that way. I just cancel my goals, but it's a conscious cancellation, which is putting my will into action, not willpower, but will, being very active with all those goals. And the other thing I have noticed is that I sleep much better. Because if I don't do this process, I have all that stuff running in my mind when I should be sleeping. And very often I will wake up thinking, oh my gosh, I forgot to do this. Or, oh my gosh, I forgot to even put it on my list. So my mind is way too busy trying to keep track of everything. And there's just no need for it. It is so simplified when using this method. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, it's one of the worksheets that when we present the video and present the tool, it's one of them that people most often say, oh my gosh, this is so complicated and I can't follow it. And at the same time, when they get it cleared up and they take it and use it, it's one of the more positive, direct positive results that we hear them talk about with the worksheet processes.
Yeah, that's for sure. I actually simplified it down for myself, and I wasn't sure it was going to work as well, but having had experience with the longer version, in the worksheet, I thought, well, I was one of those people who was looking at it like, oh, another task I have to do. You know, I have to sit down and figure out what I'm going to do and write it and all of that. So the way I simplified it was to get those chunky little notebooks with a page in spirals. And every day, I write my goals on the left side, and very simply, you know, I do the imagining of how I'm going to feel when it's done and all of that, but what I write down is the actual goal itself, and it might be just three or four. And then as I move through the day, I choose, prioritize whatever goal it is that I'm going to work on at this moment. And when I have completed that goal, I then go to the right side of the page, and I send an arrow from the goal itself to the right side of the page, and I write successful. And that really has made it pretty slick and fast and comprehensible and doable for me. However, for anyone who's new to the whole process, I think it is good to go through the worksheet and really become familiar with that.
Well,
first.
When I was first introduced to it, it was from a friend who had been, you know, at a live session where Michael presented it, and he was a very, uh-huh. you know, very, very bright, very creative person, and so he came and showed me, and he had a very simple bifold folder. You just open it up, and there's two pockets in it, and he had a little pad of paper, and he had Post-it notes, and so he would take his Post-it notes of his intentions
uh-huh.
and have them on the left side of the, when he would open up the folder, on the left side would be these Post-it notes of thoughts, intentions, plans, etc. And when he wanted to start his day, he would open up the book, and there would be these Post-it notes of possibilities, and if he moved them from the left over to the right,
mm-hmm.
they became a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could make a note about when he wanted to get it done by, and et cetera. And at the middle of the day, if he was past the point where one of those goals was supposed to be accomplished, he would either take it and mark it as done, or take it and mark it as not done and crumple it up and throw it away, or take it and mark it as not done and move it back over to the plans and intentions
mm-hmm.
side. And before he went to
mm-hmm.
bed, he'd review. He would either cancel the goal altogether or move it back over to plans and intentions. And that's how I got introduced to it. And that in itself is useful. But
yes.
there's a lot more to be learned about managing the stress of your mind, the consciously canceling the goals, the depth and the richness of that that is available if you watch the whole 2-hour lecture on getting
right.
the stress you need. There's a lot of
right.
nuance and a lot of, and then if you start working with it and you're working with the actual worksheet, then there's all kinds of things. And people, you're not the only one who said, hey, this would work better for me if I modified it a little bit. And when you
mm-hmm.
do that, you start getting a system that's tailored specifically to you and even more efficient. So congratulations on doing that.
Well, thank you. I really like the technique that your friend showed you, because at the end of the day, the right side is totally empty. It's
clear.
Clear.
Exactly.
Which is how we
yep.
want
and
our mind to be.
Yeah. Right.
That's cool.
That's what he says. It's a nice visual for him. He was a visual organizer, and he wanted that
yes.
side of the book to be just clean slate.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. I'm going to try that. And the other thing is, with that method, you have all of your desires on the other side, the mights and the maybes and the intentions, so that it's easy to see, okay, I'm not going to forget this because it's right here on a Post-it note. So I think that must relieve one's mind even a little more than having a separate sheet, which is what I do now, for my intentions. But having it all together like that, I like it. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank
right.
you for the call. I realize that we're out of time, so I will mute you so you can listen to the transition. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice and turn on her microphone.
Oh, thank you. I was actually still laying down. I'm walking towards the computer as we speak, so thanks for turning me on there. Appreciate
yeah,
that.
Laying down seems like would be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Be gentle with yourself.
I've been up with Dad most of the morning trying to get him going. The doctors and nurses are supposed to come visit him this afternoon and see if he's doing okay. His oxygen level's really low, and so I've been down there working with him. About got myself wore out working with him. But we do what we
well,
do.
Please take care of yourself.
We will. Thank you.
All right. Blessings.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, December the 16th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563 888-999-3581 and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get on, I'll just let everybody know that a couple of things. One, the apps are complete and have been accepted by both Apple and Google. So if you haven't downloaded our app to your phone, it's a free download to either the iPhone or the Android. And it's Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And it's got a glowing heart. And then once it opens, you'll see a picture of Michael and I. It's free download. And it has expanded tremendously. It now has features where it's got, you know, we had added besides the two different wake-up sheets and the Dragon Klingon game, we had added the commitments. And then we added a section where you can go to our events page and see what all's going on, what's scheduled, a lot of things happening online. You can also go to the there's a button that says more, and it takes you to a page where there's just lots and lots of information. The thing that we've added at the very top of that page is the Wellness Through Stillness free download of that MP3. And then there is a section where you can ask questions, and it doesn't matter what page you're on, what app, you know, which of the applications of the app you're in, there will be a button on every page to ask a question. And that comes to my email, and we will respond back to your email and let you know what day of the week and what time of the show that we addressed your question, and send you back an email and let you know so that you can listen to the show. We'll address all of them anonymously on the radio show. But that way, if you're working on a worksheet and you come across a question, you can just pop it to us right then, and we can get back to you with that. So it's got a lot of new features, and so please, if you haven't downloaded the app, do. And if you have, then be sure to go out and make sure it's updated, and we'll be glad to hear your comments about that and get back to us. And then one other thing, and Michael, you might want to talk about the Coptic since you're now with us. I was just getting ready to mention that coming up.
I'm sure if you've got the details in front of you, honey, if you want to go ahead. I don't have them in front of me.
Okay. It's on January the 8th and 9th. It's a two-day conference, and it's the Coptic in Michigan. They do it every year, and it's just a really fabulous. They've got a lineup of 20 different speakers, and Michael is one of the speakers. He will be speaking on Saturday the 8th. At 3 o'clock, and a lot of you know Carrie Ellis. She's been on the show with us several times, and she's speaking right after Michael. And there's all kinds of other speakers, a lot of them that we've known. John Davis is head of the Coptic, and he's speaking, of course. But there's 20 different speakers on the 2 days, and the whole conference is only $25. And so I've put the registration button on our website. It's under events. Also under news. If you click on the more button of your app, it's in that. So you know, you just anywhere, a lot of those areas that you can just get to it and get the information, download the flyer. It's on our website under schedules and events, and $25 in 2 full days. It's all online, and you get to pick up all these different magnificent speakers and singers and listen. And it's titled A New Cycle of Awakening, How to Thrive in These Transitioning Times and Reach New Levels of Growth, Expression, and Abundance. And like I said, Michael will be speaking on January the 8th at 3. That's actually going to be a pretty busy day for us because we have the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop that morning and then the Coptic that afternoon. So... anyway,
lots happening.
So participate.
Good.
Yeah, lots and lots going on. And Michael and I both are on the uphill side, I think, of this COVID. Still not 100%, but we're getting there.
Moving in the right direction. Feeling much better. So thank you, everybody, for the space you hold. And I came across this morning what's on my mind for today. So I came across a quote from Carl Jung that just put me in mind of so many things we've been doing and why having the courage to do one's work is so important. You'll remember in the beginning of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I quote Thoreau, where he says, and let me just turn to the page here, most men lead lives of quiet desperation. Pardon me, the mass of men. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, you go into the desperate country and have to console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats. In other words, kill things. A stereotyped but unconscious despair is concealed even under what are called the games and amusements of mankind. To be awake is to be alive. I have never met a man who's quite awake. And Thoreau offers a solution, although unfortunately not many tools. The tools, at least the best set that I've found to date in all the looking I have done, back up what Thoreau offers as a solution, but gives the how-to. And it goes back 2,000 years ago to this man named Yeshua. So you hear Thoreau saying, and I'm quoting this from Roman numeral page XIX in the introduction to the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And what he offers is, if you advance confidently in the direction of your dreams and endeavor to live the life you've imagined, you'll meet with success unexpected in common hours. You will pass an invisible boundary. If you build castles in the air, need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now, put a foundation under them. And the foundation required is the willingness to step in and do the work that's required. And you've heard me mention, and this just kind of ties it all together for me on just kind of with a new insight into our so-called modern culture that we think is so enlightened. So this goes back to, somewhere between 1651 and 1715, so 300 plus years ago. We hear Francois Fenelon, who was a Roman Catholic archbishop, and he's talking about, you know, at a time when religion wasn't about dogma and doctrine, but was about doing your work. And he says this: as the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We're amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our hearts a whole swarm of shameful feelings like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we'd harbored such things as we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. You know, and here he's addressing opening the unconscious mind. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter and we're filled with horror. Bear in mind, for your comfort, they only perceive our malady when the cure begins. So as you start to open to the light and open to the healing process, you start to see what it is that needs to be healed. Otherwise, it remains under the barrier, and it's what creates that condition that Thoreau was talking about of lives of quiet desperation. So the article that I ran into this morning is speaking about the state of America today, and it's referring to politics, but I'm not interested in getting into the political aspect. I'm looking at the spiritual psychology of what Carl Jung, you know, he's a Swiss psychoanalyst, psychiatrist, and here's what he wrote. The demise of society will not be a physical threat, but instead mass delusion, a collective psychosis of sorts. Jung noted that, quote unquote, the wolf inside the man was far more a threat to human existence than external forces. When mental forces become so toxic as to harm our overall well-being on an individual and collective basis, we have a collective psychic epidemic. And Jung himself said that modern society, and particularly American society, was prone to collapse due to what he called a pandemic of delusional ideas. Greater than all physical dangers are the tremendous effects of delusional ideas, which are yet denied all reality by our world-blinded consciousness. Our much-vaunted reason and our boundlessly overestimated will are sometimes utterly powerless in the face of unreal thoughts. Anything new, he says, should always be questioned and tested with caution, for it may very easily turn out to be only a new disease. That is why true progress is impossible without mature judgment. The man or woman who is unconscious of the historical context and lets slip his link with the past is in constant danger of succumbing to the crazies and delusions engendered by all novelties. And so this writer was proposing that that time that Jung was talking about had come. And it's nothing more than another expression of those who choose to remain unconscious of what's going on inside of themselves, to believe only what the surface mind tells them about how, of course, everything is everybody else's fault. And all you have to do is instruct your mind to tell you a lie, and your mind will lie to you, and it will construct all kinds of pictures that will show you that the problem that is creating your pain or your disturbance or your upset or the conflict in your relationships is outside of you. It's all somebody else's fault, and it's all a lie. And go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago. He says, in the scriptures there say, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Now, you know, if you look at one political party, they'll tell you that the issues in life are the other political party, each one pointing fingers and nobody taking responsibility and each one living in fantastical realities that have nothing to do with the truth, but so diametrically opposed that they're ready to go to war with each other. And here we are, human beings, sharing a human experience, and the human experience we are blinded to by those unresolved conflicts that we carry around inside of ourselves. That Fenelon was talking about, that all of a sudden they start to become visible, and we're horrified that that could possibly have been within us. And guess what? It is. It is because we've raised up a culture without the tools to deal with their lives. So 2,000 years ago, Yeshua was with a particular group of people that the dozen or so disciples were well acquainted with, and the others who hanging in at that time. And when Yeshua gave them specific instructions about what they needed to do, and that was they needed to learn to live as the active presence of love. They needed to give up their rage and their fear and their guilt and their terror and their trauma and their drama and their hatred and their vengeance. Half of his audience turned away, left and said, too hard a thing. Half of his disciples quit on the spot. Too hard a saying. And my take is that half went off and made up an easy theology that said, well, you just call on a magic name and then see everything's handled. If you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he didn't say, just call on my magic name and I'll take care of it all for you. He said, there's a work to be done. But when we raise a culture up with a fantasy that somebody else is going to take care of all of our psychological needs and desires and unresolved conflicts, then we live in this fantasy that leads to exactly what we're experiencing in our culture today. We need to raise up a mature group of people who understand the dynamics inside of themselves and have the tools with which to resolve those dynamics. The core tool, which was given 2,000 years ago, and the culture turned exactly backward, core tool that he taught today, people call forgiveness. And it goes like this. You did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me. Of course, I have no responsibility for my pain. There's the immature, childish mind always blaming everybody else. If you got somebody that you actually believe right now, if they change, your life would be better, as though they're the cause of what's going on inside of you? If you do, then you're telling yourself a lie. need to move into a mature adult mind that says, oh, I'm in pain. I wonder what thought disorders are moving in me that I need to forgive. And then forgiveness becomes the tool with which you go inside yourself and remove the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the drama, and the trauma, so that you get to live as a human being. Now, what I've just said in the last 5 minutes, most people would say, too hard a saying, Michael. But we're here with fully matured instructions and tools to support each person in doing that piece of work, changing the unconscious dynamics, changing the family dynamics, and returning to a sane world and a sane life. And my offering is that an insane mind is a mind that is functioning without active present love operating in it. And all you have to do is tune in to any news station anytime, and you'll hear about, and it doesn't matter which side of the argument you're on, it doesn't matter whether you're whatever all the labels are that different political factions have been given, and so, it doesn't matter what your labels are. Each person needs to grow to adulthood, take responsibility for their own unconscious conflicts, for their own thought disorders, learn how forgiveness actually works, and remove the unconscious content that Carl Jung said was more dangerous to society than any physical threat. His words go back many years, and it was so prophetic. So moving into a place where there is the willingness to look, and, you know, as Fenelon was talking about, we're aghast when we start to see what's in there. Oh, my God, that couldn't possibly be in me. Yes, it is. You know, we've got to stop lying to ourselves. I don't care how modern and sophisticated you appear to be. Unless you come from a long family line of people who have understood and done their work, you're just as insane as the next person. When the stress is up and the chips are down, notice your mind turns to hostility and fear rather than love. Notice your mind's got judgments about those other people and punishments you would pronounce upon them. You become judge and jury, and they're the problem. And you better run away from them because it might be dangerous to be around them who are the problem, all the while denying your own unconscious dynamics. Each and every one of us carries a power person dynamic. That power person dynamic was installed in our minds when three things occurred. And there may be many examples of this in each person's mind. The three things that occur to install the power person dynamic are, one, you're under the care and control of someone who had more power over your life than you did. Two, that person was not functioning out of love, was not functioning as love. And three, you perceived it as survival. When that happens, the energy field of the object of that situation opens wide, just like a sponge, and every energetic dynamic, if there's rage or terrorism or hate or fear or whatever going on in the environment in those moments, every energy pattern is just sucked into the energy field of that individual, into the carbon-based memory. And if it's a generational pattern, it goes in at deeper and deeper and deeper levels because it's been going on for and being replicated for so many generations. Ultimately, what we each need to do is to grow to understand how our own mind produces the world called perception. And when the stress is up and the chips are down, no matter how wonderful we want to be, the power person dynamic is going to take over. And you'll be forced to do exactly what your power person did to you that you hated the most. And you'll do it against your own will and choice. And after you do, you'll say, I'll never do that again. But if you never go in and clean it up in yourself, the next time the stress is up and the chips are down, you'll do it again. This is a dilemma that's been going on planet Earth for thousands of years. It's time for us to establish a mechanism that supports people on a global scale in understanding who they are and how their own minds and bodies work, how the perceptual system in each person's mind works, and how to get it on track, the principles by which it operates. You know, back a week or so ago, Mark and I did a conversation about the Beatitudes from the Aramaic, and it is a clear, concise, simple set of instructions on here's how you get your mind to function as a human mind. And until you have a set of guidelines for doing that, things are kind of willy-nilly. Well, one day I'm happy, and the next time I'm enraged, the next day I'm kind of okay, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And it's crazy-making. When one lives in a state of denial, remember our definition of denial, is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something moving inside of me. When I'm in denial, in order to believe the lie that something out there is the cause, I have to hide or dissociate from what the real cause is. And now I've created an unnatural condition for a human being. I've created an unconscious mind. Now what I hold to be true unconsciously will be constructed by my mind as the fact, the perceptual construct that is the fact of what's happening outside of me, but it will always and only reflect what's happening inside of me. And until I have a way, and to me this is such a genius piece of information that Yeshua gave us 2,000 years ago, when I have a way to systematically, consistently, and persistently collapse my mind's lies, collapse the perceptual constructs that have me believing everybody else is the problem. When I consistently, persistently apply that tool, then I start to open what was called the veil of the temple. The veil of the temple, as many religionists would translate it, is not a purple curtain in a church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and unconscious mind in your own temple, your own body. And until you start to willingly, consistently, persistently open that barrier and start to get brave enough to put a light in there and really start to look at the dynamics, then your perceptual world is going to be crazy making off the wall. So the reason we're here is to establish the presence of that teaching in a way that anybody can take it and make it workable and understandable. There's no religion engaged in or involved. The man who delivered these tools to the earth 2,000 years ago was not a religious figure. He was a physiologist, a psychologist, a geneticist, and a physiologist. He knew exactly how the world worked. But hey, if you turn him into a theologian, you can get people fighting wars over religions. Yeah, that's exactly what the unconscious wants to do, is find somebody to destroy for what's going on inside of itself. And we're here to support people opening up and recognizing the only thing to fight about is the unresolved content of our own mind. And when we give up those thought disorders, then we create a space for true human life, the true active presence of love that we are, to show up in our own physiology, in our own relationships, in our own finances, in our own jobs and creations in the world. And the whole game changes. So we're here to support the changing of the game. And if you want to support us doing that, great. Take the tools, put them to work. As you said, the app is there. She just added a whole new section to it. It's just becoming so profoundly powerful. You can now go and listen to the meditation Wellness to Stillness free. It's normally a product you have to buy. It's in the app. There's a link to it. Worksheets are there. I mean, we were going over it this morning, and it just links to so many things and so much. It's like being established as here's a go-to place that you can send anybody. They can download the book for free and copy it or read it. And, you know, the tools are all there, and all you do is go to your app store and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Generously, lovingly, and with a great deal of effort created by Jeannie. Thank you for all the early mornings. Our technical crew is in India, so 5 o'clock in the morning, I hear click, click, click on the phone, and there's Jeannie on the phone with somebody in India who's doing the technical end of creating this app. So I'm going to move into the, unless you've got a hand up, Jeannie, you move into the reading for today. Have you got a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room? Okay, well then let's go to, all right, let's go to the bottom of page 166. We're up to step 4 in chapter 24 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So we're into the worksheet process, and we've gone through laying out the challenging situation, what the details are of how I feel and what's going on. And we're moving in the direction of confirming that I'm willing to do something different. So step 4, if you're following us, we're on the bottom of page 166, is the act of acknowledging how you want to live. It's also important to fill the void that is left whenever you release something. Recall we spoke about the power of words. When word phrases show up with ease in our speech, it tends to be more natural to create those circumstances. It's interesting. If you go to the Aramaic language, the word that has been translated as manifest. You know, you're going to manifest something. That word actually is obvious. When the energetic patterns in your mind say, of course, this is the way it works, then that's how it's going to work for you. And so to hold a mass of data that says this is obvious means that you're about creating that result. So the person who uses angry words will tend up to easily find circumstances about which to be angry. The person who regularly uses peaceful speech will find peace comes easily. Our words reflect the realities contained in our minds and what we are attracting into our lives. So step 4 is the, I am willing to live peacefully. And it's like, okay, so we're making a choice to live peacefully, to be happy, and to go through the symptoms of healing. I recall what you said earlier about the symptoms of healing, Richard says, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes, and those symptoms are on page 135 and 136 in the book. I'm willing to do what it takes to heal it. It seems bizarre that I used to search for trouble purposely. I consciously or maybe unconsciously went looking for it. When I think about the language I used to describe myself, women, the body, and intimate interaction, it's amazing. I held a relationship together for even a week. I had no verbal respect for anything. Word patterns are structured into our minds at an early age. Becoming conscious of taking charge and changing those patterns takes intelligence and commitment. A decent, intimate relationship is impossible if the words we use to describe ourselves, the body, the opposite sex, or relationships result in degrading feelings. In the Aramaic scriptures, it was said that he who could rule his tongue was mightier than he who could take a city. That's a lot of power. But you watch how people's automatic speech patterns take over. You know, I think about this person. I can remember, you know, processing some of this stuff in the early days of doing this work. And I can remember just being amazed. It's like, why as a kid was I ever even exposed to thoughts and words that were as vulgar as I was exposed to? Like, well, what is that? Why? How does that even happen? Why would anybody take a tender, sweet being called a child made of the presence of love and introduce them to the ugliness of the words that, like, you know, in our culture just revolve around simple physical intimacy? Why would anybody expose a child to such a thing? Well, there's only one reason. It's what's in their minds. So it's these early word games that we get played around us. And the power of taking charge of your words is a major piece of work to do, especially when you're under stress. Because what happens is, under stress, we'll tend to go into the automatic decision system, and whatever words we heard the power person use in those similar circumstances are the words that we'll use. Even if we say we hated it when we heard our power person use those words, it becomes the pattern in the mind. There's a thing that we study in the Laws of Living Intensive. It's called regulatory speech. And regulatory speech is a speech that runs physiology, cellular chemistry. It runs our emotions. It runs our creative process. It is the root of the energy fields that set up what ends up showing up as our lives. It's called regulatory speech. And the way that regulatory speech occurs is we first hear it. We hear somebody say it. And then we say it. We start to use that speech. Then we utilize that speech silently to ourselves. And at that stage, if that speech is experienced to reduce stress, then that will move into what we call the regulatory speech system, and it'll run your life. Along about the age of 13, a child's regulatory speech system pretty much solidifies. Until someone becomes very cognizant and very conscious and very willing, it's pretty much solidified and will run that person's whole adult life. We're looking to change that dynamic. We're looking to have that understanding become the cultural norm, and that the speech that's used around child, especially toward and about the child, toward and about self, is loving, gentle, respectful speech. When the child learns that, and that becomes their what solidifies in their speech system. You know, we hear a culture that tells us all about, well, you know, you have to send those kids to school to socialize them. Well, you know, way back, and I don't have the statistics in front of me, but back in the 50s, the Los Angeles Education Department, in concert with the Los Angeles Police Department, put out a bulletin that spoke about the challenges in the 1950s in the classrooms and schools. And the challenges were things like chewing gum in class and getting out of line at recess and talking in the classroom. Really terrible things. And then by the 1980s, when this was put out, the challenges in those same schools, none of those chewing gum, paper throwing in the hall. No, it was rape. It was murder. It was drugs. What happened? The speech was changed. Think twice before you subject anyone under the age of 13 to speech that is not in alignment with where you want that child to be able to naturally live. So Richard admitted his language had been pretty raunchy for most of his life. He was identified with the idea that his thoughts caused his feelings. He was identifying with, finally, his thoughts caused his feelings, and decided he was ready to feel better about life, his body, and those with whom he had relationships. He liked the idea of maintaining a condition of love in his mind, and took a break to do the exercise of restoring the space of love from page 171 and 172. He made a commitment to continue that exercise as a daily practice in his life. And we're asking you, or inviting you, suggesting to you that if you want the benefits that this work offers, then you're going to have to do something different than what the culture has taught you. And many people, you know, see, you mean I actually need to change? Oh, come on now. The problem isn't me, it's them. They're the ones that need to change. There's a cute cartoon that came across my Facebook page a while back, and somebody who's obviously a politician standing up on the stump giving a speech, and he's all rah, rah. And how many want things to change? And everybody's throwing their hats in the air and celebrating. Yay, loud, yay. And the next frame, the same politician standing in front of the same crowd says, and how many want to change? Everybody's head was hanging down. There wasn't a yay in the crowd. Oh, yeah. It's easy to want everybody else to change, but to actually take charge of the patterns in your energy system, to put the tools to work, it's a monumental task. But it can be done. And there are many who will subvert what needs to be done to make the changes. And each person is going to have to find their way to the clarity that is available and possible through the use of the tools. So we're here to assist and be that guidepost. And how can we support you, Miss Jeannie? Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up? If you're out there in listener land, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then, if you have a question or a comment, something to share with us, if you push 1, that raises a hand in the control panel, and we will be having a conversation with you. And we would love to support you. We would love to have a conversation with you. Any questions on any of the tools, anything we can support you with, that's what we're here to do. So, Ms. Jeannie?
We do have 2 hands up, but I'm not sure if Magda's has gone up a second time or if she's already talked to Dr. Tim. Her hand was up first, so I'm going to click her on.
Well,
Magda,
say hello to
you're on.
The young lady. Hey, Magdalena.
Hi there. I'm just listening. I'm having a good time listening.
All right.
Okay. And I'm so glad that you're both feeling better, and I urge both of you, definitely Jeannie, to take care.
Yeah.
We are resting and taking care of ourselves. We've actually established a new tradition that last thing at night, I go down and peel an apple, and we eat an apple as a snack. And first thing in the morning, before we get out of bed, or well, I have to get out, I go down and peel an apple, and we eat an apple in the morning. And it's like just a nice energy to start and finish our day with. And we were talking about this morning that's what we're going to do from now on. So it's part of taking care of ourselves.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that
is cool.
And we both have discovered some pluses that have come out of this, that it's like an upgrade in a way. You know, I've been having neck issues for a long time and been using like this electric stimulator and all this on my neck. And my neck is probably 90% to 95% better. And I don't know how the COVID cleared that one out, but and then Michael's had some things that have cleared up for him as well. So besides
Absolutely.
Getting through the COVID. Yeah. So the biggest thing right
Last
now
night.
Is hold the space.
Yes.
Hold the space for
Go
Dad
ahead,
because Dad's oxygen levels dropped, and it's like, and I don't know. I said part of it may be because we've stayed separate from him as much as we could. You know, we wear masks and go down and fix him meals and make sure he's okay, but we're not really stimulating him like we had been doing, and it's almost like he's quit. And so we've really had a struggle with him yesterday evening and today, just trying to get him to breathe and sit up straight. And the nurses and all are coming this afternoon. And so hold the space for him.
I definitely will.
Yeah, this whole COVID experience for me has it's having for me an interesting impact. It's like another level of motivation to take care of myself and do my work. And last night I went to sleep still point breathing, and probably three or four times through the night, you know, came up to conscious awareness and went back down, and the whole night was one continuous still point breathing process. So this morning when I woke up, I was feeling like 100% better.
Wonderful.
So it's really been motivation for an upgrade.
Good. All right. Good to hear that. Well, I will definitely keep your dad in love and light and send the angels of healing. And I'm going to go back to my kitchen work while I'm nursing, okay?
Enjoy.
Okay.
Young lady.
And Michael, you need to move your microphone.
You.
Your Darth Vader that breathing. Yeah. All right. Next caller is Roma 808. You're on the air. Hey.
Hi.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. It's so good to hear both of you.
Good to be heard.
I wanted to share with you that I woke up a couple of nights ago and was just lying in bed. I couldn't go back to sleep. And I just decided to do some mind shifters. And I started with the first one, the healing into aliveness, and ended up going through all the 13 of the first one. And there were some that triggered like a negative response, so I wrote those. And then there were some that didn't. So 7 of the 13 I ended up writing about. And I eventually got tired and decided I'd go back to sleep. But I turned the light out and I lay there, and I was aware of being in a completely different state of mind. And let's see, what was I going to tell you? I had the realization. I looked inside to see what was going on, and I could see that my heart was moving forward, and rather than contracting, going backwards. It's hard to describe.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's like. So that was pretty distinct and very, very beautiful thing to experience. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Sweet. That's powerful.
Uh-huh. Most of my nature is fundamentally, I'm triple water sign. So my nature is fundamentally emotional. And I think that the main benefit that I've been getting from doing the worksheet all these years had to do with major emotional shifts on whatever I might have found myself going through emotionally that triggered me to pick up a worksheet. But
right.
This was really distinctively my mind. And so it was very interesting for me to see the distinction within me of my mind as opposed or in contrast to my emotions. So
right.
That was an interesting
awesome.
Thing.
Is
So well, I
remember
just
in the intensive.
Yeah.
I was going to say in the intensive, remember we talked about becoming the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and it sounds like that's just becoming first nature for you. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was so beautiful to just be able to distinguish each thing in their differences from the others. So it was a very
nice
experience. Yeah. So thank you for
congratulations. That's what we need. That's what the culture needs so desperately, is people who can do that instead of just popping off with whatever's in their mind at any given moment. So nice work. That's what we need.
Okay.
I love what
yeah,
the course
wanted...
says, you know, your healing will open the space for millions yet unborn. So that's awesome.
There we go. Okay, well, y'all keep on keeping on. I'm so glad to hear that you're experiencing COVID as an opportunity for healing. I mean, it's not surprising that would be your natural inclination, but I just send you my love and my blessings, and to your father too, Jeannie. And
thank
we
you.
Know
we accept. Thank you.
For all of you. Uh-huh. Okay. Aloha, everyone.
Cool. Aloha. All right, so we've got about 12 or 13 minutes left. So if you're out there in listener land, we've got time for plenty of conversation. Push one. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about what's on your mind, how your practice is going, what little refinements there are. By the way, one of the things that you'll find that's new in the updated version of the Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness app is that on each page, there's a button you can click and you can ask any question that you've got. That question will be sent to Jeannie. She'll bring it forward on the radio show, and we'll share the answer and email you back with when the question was answered, so you can go back to the archives and pick that up if you don't have to be on the show live. So, and something we'd really appreciate is if you'd turn other people onto the app. You know, we're not out there with a big advertising budget, spending millions to make the culture aware of it. But, you know, each one teach one. If each person introduced one other person, it wouldn't take long for millions to be using the tools and getting that shift that I think Carl Jung was hoping to inspire in people by letting them know just how this collective unconscious works and how we can clean it up. So if there's any way we can support you, push one. If you're in the app, click that Ask a Question. And bingo, your question will be in our hands. And the functionality that Jeannie's added to the app is just awesome, like next level stuff. And it's an easy way to find everything on our website. You know, there's a link there that says, when you open it up, it says more. And if you click that, it takes you right into, you can just go right down the list of, you know, all the important pages on the website are just listed right there. You can just click, 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 and it's right there. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? Call in numbers 563-999-3581. Let's have a conversation.
With no hands up, I just want to offer, and a couple of times the gentleman in India that's helping me has asked questions. You know, it's sort of like a fish in water, I think, sometimes, that the information is so close to you that you can't see the answer. And he'll ask questions, and it's like, okay, you did that in the app, so, you know, here's how you do it, here's how you listen to the show. And but, you know, while we mentioned that I get up at like 5 in the morning to be able to talk to them while they're still at work, I also would like to acknowledge that this gentleman also will work at home. He'll be at home at 11 to 12 o'clock at night, his time, working with me when it's middle of the day for my time. So he's making sacrifices on his end too, and I appreciate, you know, the camaraderie that we have developed, to even to the point that he sent me pictures of his little girl's first birthday this morning. So
sweet pictures.
I just think it's real sweet.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Global
so
community.
I'm glad that we have someone that connected to work with to do this work with, and hopefully he's getting part of it too.
For sure. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? We've got about 10 minutes left.
We got a hand up, so and I believe it's
great. Let's say hello,
Miss Susan. Susan Bingham. Hi.
Hi. Hi, guys. I'm so glad you're so much better. Wow.
So are we.
Great. I know. And you pushed right through it. Dr. Tim gave a little section of his show today on how we don't tend to let ourselves rest. And I don't know whether it was a little comment in your direction or something, because you're guilty. But you managed to, you know, Jeannie sacked out right in the middle. I love Zoom. You can wear your pajamas. You can go to bed during Zoom, and you're still on there. That was a new thing. But anyway, Magda, one of the great things yesterday is Magda texted me the link to, and I forget his name now, a doctor who himself has insomnia, and so he's done a lot of research on insomnia, and he says there are lots of supplements, and there are lots of medications, and there are lots of things. out there. But the best thing is if you get your glasses off and you open the window or go outside when the sun is rising, you set your circadian rhythm. There's something about that light, and it isn't the fact that you're seeing it. It's that the light is getting into your brain somehow. You could be blind, but
the
you go out
gland.
There and look.
Yep.
Yeah, he was talking about that. You know that more than I do. So,
and we live in a culture that does everything it can do to destroy the pineal gland, the one light-sensitive gland in the body. You know, the chlorine in the water, the fluoride. I mean, most drugs have got fluoride in them, and they're all pineal killers.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh,
geez. Antidepressants and such, fluorine is a part of them, and that's called halides, and they're attracted to the pineal, and they literally calcify the pineal so it can't work properly. And it's just a manifestation,
that's
to
close.
Me, of our culture's denial.
Yeah. Boy, is that scary. You know, it's hard to find a tube of toothpaste without fluoride in it. So.
Yes, that's true.
So, but the other thing he said was, we think about the sunrise. He said, when the sun sinks and the light changes, get out there again. He said, because we register that as an invitation to start shutting down for the night. And it's the same kind of thing. I'd never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm not sure how well this works because I'm out when the sun's rising anyway for a long walk. And I'm out again with Tim Bingham when the sun is going down. And I still don't sleep all that well. So we're still working on it. But I just love knowing that. That that's a big thing you can do.
Very powerful. Yeah, right on track. And
are you stopping and facing it, though? Oh, yeah. In fact, he said it's not just east. And he said, watch out, you know, when the sun's coming up. You don't want to stare at it and ruin your retina. But he said the light in the sky, the whole eastern light that's coming up, he said, you don't have to be out there that long to get that benefit. And he didn't say how long that was. But and the same thing at night, just stop everything, go out and join up with that big event of the sun going down and take that in. And of course, he does talk about artificial light. Don't put on overhead lights. If you have to have light on, have them dim and low to the floor. And there are certain kinds of light that are better than others. I think he said blue light's good. And I know there are filters you can put on things or glasses you can wear to do that. But, you know, it's all that stuff. And Jeannie, here you are up talking to India at 5 a.m. Well, that's the kind of light, I suppose. You're awfully good to do that. That's amazing and exciting about that.
I will say that since I have had COVID, that I have averaged over 8 hours of sleep a night, and I haven't done that in years.
Oh, yeah.
So the physical fatigue is forcing me to sleep, I guess.
Yeah, my friend Mira said the same thing. She's sort of an insomniac too. Cancel both those saying that, because I'm saying I'm sleeping better and better. But she also had tremendous fatigue and slept a great deal and thought it might have reset herself. Now she's thinking it didn't. There's something else that needs correcting, but she did love being able to sleep that much, and I'm glad you're sleeping a lot. That's great. And Michael,
one of the
probably
things
are
about
too.
Blue, oh, yeah, definitely. Blue light is not healthy for the brain or for the eyes. In fact, it's damaging.
Oh, good.
Your phone, when you're looking at your phone screen and it's really bright and white looking, that's actually blue light you're looking at. And it's damaging to the eye. If you look in your settings, there's a setting for a blue light filter to cut that off. The screen is not nearly as appealing with the blue light filter on, but it's much healthier for the eyes and for the brain.
Okay, I'm fiddling with my phone. I want to find that right away, Michael. Where do I look? Yeah.
Well, do you have
probably
a search
display
feature? Yeah.
What?
It'll say blue light filter. If you've got a search feature, a binder.
Yeah.
You're on an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
I'm not very familiar with the iPhone, but I think there's a finder button, like a search button somewhere. If you put that in and put in blue light filter, it'll probably show
okay.
it to you and you can turn it on. I know I remember when I first learned of that and started using it back a few years ago, the screen wasn't nearly as appealing to me, but as you read more and see what that blue light does to the eye, I mean, it's actually damaging to the retina and such. You don't want that. And the same, like we switched over a lot of our light bulbs in the house to LED lights, but LED lights put out blue light. And so the ones, like, for instance, in the kitchen or where Aria plays in her play yard, there's some lights across the room from there, and we took those out and put in regular lights so that she's not looking at blue lights all the time.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
LEDs.
Well, I'll mess around with it. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, I found brightness, so I'll take the brightness down. And you can do a dark
okay.
mode, which is quite grisly, but maybe it's healthier.
Yeah, it reverses the light, the dark and the light.
Yeah.
But there should be a blue light filter there that you can click on in the display, and it'll dim the screen somewhat. You can still keep the screen bright enough to see, but it dims that bright blue light that is so offensive to the brain and the eye.
Okay. Well, I'll
cool.
Look.
Well,
anyway,
anything,
good to know.
Anything else exciting happening in your world?
Well, it's just amazing how you're like this walking encyclopedia for facts. You know, I'll ask you a question, and you'll know the answer to it and a lot of things all around the edges. So it's just fun. Yeah. Yeah,
good
things
we get
are
to
going
play
on.
Together.
Yeah. Jacob is better and better and better. And so that's just
sweet.
So we hear from him almost every day, and he's doing his work. He even posts some stuff on Facebook sometimes about how, you know, he talks about forgiveness and stuff. It's not in the terminology that he's getting the messages anyway and correcting himself.
That's awesome.
And he's good. And you know what this guy said on about melatonin? You might know this, Michael, too. He says melatonin will help you get to sleep, but it won't keep you there. And it inhibits young children from going properly through puberty. It delays puberty. And this kid, Jacob, took melatonin all through his childhood to sleep.
Hmm.
So he said, don't panic if you gave that to your kid, but it's just known to do that. So anyway.
Yeah,
I
there's a lot
if
we
knew
don't
that
know
or
yet.
Not. I
no,
know.
That's a new piece of information, the inhibiting of puberty. That's a new piece of information for me.
Yeah, slowing it down.
That's interesting. I have to do some
yeah,
reading.
Yeah, I haven't told his mother that. I didn't even want to tell her. But of all the three of her boys, he's the one who, you could say he's the one that had it slowed down, although you'd never think of it. But it just seems as if it might have done that to him, and maybe that screwed a lot of other things up. Who knows?
Well,
anyway,
hold the space that as he attunes and moves into his healing space, that everything on every level starts to reorganize around the highest and best for him. So holding the space for that.
Oh, thanks.
All right, everybody.
I know.
Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.